of home were burning brightly when I left so long ago.
You're listening to Can't Do Nothing With Love, an award-winning short story collection written and read by Ellen Morris Pruitt. Today's episode features Squiggles the Squirrel. Squiggles the Squirrel had an orange nose and yellow cheeks. When he opened his mouth, his furry tongue flapped, just like a real tongue, and he had two big white teeth. He held an acorn, brown and green, in his hand. When we arrived at Lake Minnetonka Camp and Resort, he came over to say hi. I could tell it was hi by the way he jumped and cocked his head and waved, then covered his mouth with his palm. My mom said, "Look, Scotty, it's Squiggles the Squirrel. He's waving at you. Wave back." I waved, and he waved at me. We waved at each other. His palm was orange. That happened last year when I was only 8 years old. The first summer, my mom and I went to Lake Minnetonka Camp and Resort. We stayed in the sparrow cabin up in the woods at the end of a turnaround. The cabin had a sparrow nailed to the door, not a real sparrow, a wooden one. We were unpacking when Squiggles the Squirrel huffed and puffed up the road, then bent over his palms on his thighs. When he saw me, he started the waving. This year, when we went to Lake Minnetonka, we had Tuggles the Walrus. Tuggles was kind of moldy, and he waddled. His tusks were skinny and dirty where he hadn't kept them clean. His stomach was obviously fake, lumpy, and low. But his fingernails looked real, like horn material I'd seen in an ocean museum when my dad took me to Biloxi one time. "Made from walrus penis," Tuggles told me, tapping the fingernails on my forehead. "Fossilized walrus penis." Except by then, I knew he wasn't really Tuggles. His name was Larry. He was inside the Tuggles the Walrus suit, and he was boinking my mom. There wasn't a real lake at Lake Minnetonka Camp and Resort, just a cow pond down by the resort hall. I liked the resort hall. It had a screen porch and a fireplace, but the fireplace wasn't lit because it was summer. The woman who ran the camp yelled at me when I scurried in, letting the screen door slam. "Took care to yourself." She was Ukrainian. She talked like Dracula. She probably sucked all the blood out of the field mice who died in the fireplace. Then she'd get Larry to throw their bodies into the high grass around the cow pond. Larry emptied the garbage bins. He did whatever the resort lady told him to do. When I asked her where Squiggles the Squirrel had gone, "Squiggles the Squirrel was way better than Tuggles the Walrus." She held my chin in her palm. "Little boy, hold on to the dreams in your head," she said. My mom was sitting in one of the big sofas near the fireplace smoking a cigarette. She was talking to a woman who was staying in the Little Bear cabin. Her kid, a girl named Sophia, with red hair like me, had torn the Little Bear off the front door. Now the Little Bear was standing on a stone in the turnaround in front of the cabin, stomping on a Barbie doll like Godzilla. "In some states, they arrest both parties," my mom was telling Mrs. Dallas. "Not in Mississippi. In Mississippi, they don't arrest anyone." My mom was talking about my dad. When the cops used to come to the front door, she'd joke with them, standing there with her hand on her hip, a washcloth over her eye. Then she'd talk football to show she was a regular Joe. But she would talk football even in the springtime, when everyone else was talking NBA playoffs, so they knew she was winging it. My dad left when he met a woman down at the dirt track who owned her own modified. Last year, when we met Squiggles, was our first summer on our own. This summer, before we left for Lake Minnetonka, I reminded young Peter about Squiggles the Squirrel. Young Peter said, "Squiggles the Squirrel." Young Peter's my best friend. He has a wolf. The wolf's fur is pure white, and the wolf will lay its head in your lap. "Young Peter and his wolf," my mom says. "Wolf is the nice one of those two." The wolf yawns, and a little howl escapes. The wolf's name is Captain Darby, because young Peter's mom is named Darby, and young Peter wanted to name the wolf after his mom, except it was a boy wolf, so he added the captain part. Young Peter, because his dad is named Peter, and the dad Peter lives in the same house with young Peter, and Captain Darby the wolf, and Darby the mom, he doesn't believe the spy satellite USA-193 filled with hydrazine is going to hit the Earth. Young Peter was over at my house, hanging out in my bedroom while I packed, seeing if he could wrench the table leg off the table. It's a hinged table leg, but it's metal, and it was giving him problems. "They're not going to let that dumb satellite hit Earth," he said. "You're a dork if you think that." My mom says I shouldn't let young Peter call me names, I should stand up for myself. But young Peter calls everyone names. Maggie Moo Cow, Nora Knockknees. Sometimes he calls me Scotty Toilet Paper. When he gets mean, I pet Captain Darby. His fur is so soft. But young Peter was wrong about the satellite. Yeah, maybe not the whole satellite, but when they shoot it down, busting it into a million pieces, one of the pieces might hit us. Who cares if one of a million pieces hits you? Young Peter was in a bad mood because I was going on vacation and he wasn't. My mom yelling at me, "Where's your navy shorts?" "The pieces are still going to be gigantic," I said. "A million gigantic pieces falling through the Earth's atmosphere. They could hit Lake Minicata," I added, to make him feel better. "I'll bet you," young Peter said, because his dad said it all the time. "I'll bet you money on that." Except young Peter didn't bet money. He bet things, like dares or first dibs on my lunch for a week. "You can't bet," I said, as he waggled the table leg back and forth, wearing it down. "'Cause you'll lose, but I'll never get my money. Because when the satellite hits Earth, we'll all be dead, at least those of us within spew range. It's not going to happen." Young Peter gave one last jerk, and off came the table leg. My mom wasn't going to like that, but she'd believe me when I told her young Peter did it. Young hooligan, she called him. Three guesses where he'll end up. I watched young Peter wave the table leg over his head, and I didn't know whether I was wishing the satellite would hit the Earth, spewing poisonous fuel all over Laurel, Mississippi, hitting the dirt track, and my dad's girlfriend racing around the track in her modified Chevy, and hitting young Peter's house, except not hitting Captain Darby, because he would have wandered over to my house, sensing like animals do that something was about to happen. Or maybe I wanted the satellite to whiz on by, falling and falling but disappearing as it fell, until it was just little bitty pieces, never intending to hurt anyone at all, just our imagination, then gone. If young Peter were here at Lake Minicata, he'd know what to do with the red-headed girl named Sophia. My mom told me to play with her, have a good time, but Sophia was kind of, I don't know, different. "Boy Heiny," she said, making it sound dirty. "It's Boy Heidi," I said. "Not to me, it isn't." We were walking the dirt path leading from the resort hall to the picnic tables. The picnic tables were concrete. You couldn't scoot the benches closer to the tables because the benches were concrete, too. So you had to lean over to eat your sandwich or stand up. I like to stand up. That's a baby thing to do, Sophia said, because she was a year older than me. She was wearing a dress, even though we were playing outside. Climbing onto the bench, she planted her foot on the table like an explorer. Her tennis shoes were red with purple laces. "My best friend has a wolf," I said. "I pet it all the time." Sophia shaded her eyes with the palm of her hand like she was Columbus scouting for land. Except we were on land and looking out over a cow pond. "Just charting the weather. I might want to go for a sail on the lake." "It's not a lake, it's a cow pond. You don't know." The picnic table smelled moldy, like the walrus suit Larry wore when he was Tuggles, probably from the dead leaves and grody pine straw blown against the concrete. Tiny bugs scurried when you kicked the leaves. Mom and Mrs. Dallas were at the store buying steaks. We were all going to cook out tonight, steaks and baked potatoes. Lettuce, too, for salad. Mom loved to pound a head of lettuce against the counter, crack it open, and listen to it rip. I didn't know if she was getting sour cream or not, but I liked sour cream on my baked potato. "I know what," Sophia said. "Let's see if we can find a boat. I know where the old fishing boats are. They're tied on the beach." The beach was gritty with tiny stones. If you went swimming, you had to wear rubber shoes to keep the stones from hurting your feet. The first year, Mom and I didn't know about the stones, and we hopped around. This year, we brought rubber water shoes that sucked onto your feet and held tight. "I mean," Sophia said, "see if we can get one loose and set it on the water." But the boats looked rickety to me, full of holes that would sink us in a New York minute. But if we really did get one on the water, I could tell young Peter about it. And then, even if the USA-193 satellite didn't hit the Earth, I'd have something to talk about. "What satellite?" Sophia asked as we ducked under pine limbs in a shortcut to the beach. That was just like a girl, to not know she was about to get blown to smithereens. "I don't believe it," she said when I explained to her about the danger. "It's true. It's all over the Internet, the satellite's trajectory and everything." Sophia slapped at a mosquito on her arm. "It isn't true. My dad would have told me if it was true." It reminded me I didn't have a dad around to tell me what was true and what wasn't. The boats leaned against each other on the beach. They were metal, like the tub young Peter stood Captain Darby in when it was time for his bath. The stakes tying them down were wooden, with the ropes looped on the end. All you had to do was lift the loop, and the boat was free. "If the satellite hits, then the water is probably the safest place to be," I said, as we pushed one of the boats across the beach. The bottom of the boat was flat, but something was digging into the pebbly rock, and we had to push hard, then rest, then push hard again to make the boat scoot toward the water. Except it was going at an angle, not towards the water at all. So Sophia went to the end and tugged while I pushed, trying to keep it on track. The real danger is with the 1,000 pounds of hydrazine fuel. The fuel is in the satellite's fuel tank. If the satellite hits land, the fuel explodes and spews toxic gas all over the place. If the fuel hits water because of its chemical makeup, it'll just fizzle. No one dies. I didn't know if technically this was true or not, but I liked the way it sounded. Even if we don't get hit by the hydrazine, we could get crushed by one of the gigantic plummeting pieces of satellite. A spy satellite is huge, even if it's broken apart. But in a boat, we could just jump into the pond and the pieces would sink beside us. Sophia stopped and rested her palms on the boat, staring at me. I am sick to death of the satellite. We stood for a minute, then she said, "Your dad left your mom." I shrugged. "I'm not sorry." "Did she cry?" "No," I replied, even though she did at first. "She thinks it's funny she put up with him all those years, waiting for him to be nice like at the beginning. Then he ran off. She wants him to come back so she can laugh in his face. It's so funny." She's dating a walrus. "I know." I ran my finger down the metal edge of the boat. "He's gross. Squiggles the squirrel was way better." At her blank look, I added, "Squiggles the squirrel was here last year. He was nice and happy and everything. He was way better." She kicked the rocky beach with her toe. "I wish we had Squiggles the squirrel this year. I never get Squiggles the squirrel. I'm always too late." When she glanced up at me, she looked like she was going to cry. "I always get the stupid walrus." "You better tug, 'cause I'm going to push," I said. But before I could, she grabbed the boat and yanked. I could see the muscles in her arms. I bent my head. I was shoving hard when she yelled, "Okay, stop!" We were about a foot from the water. The pond was brown and smooth. "I'm going to pull it into the water," she said. "Then when we get it rocking, we can both jump in." If she did that, she was going to get her shoes wet, maybe even her legs. But I didn't say anything because she nodded like that was that. I grabbed the boat. The metal was hot from sitting in the sun. I blew on my fingers, then shoved. The boat flew free. I heard a yelp and looked up. The boat had torpedoed into the lake, dragging Sophia with it. She was struggling, trying to get into the boat, but her weight was rocking the boat all over the place. "Help!" she yelled. "Help me, Scotty!" "Let go!" I yelled. It couldn't be that deep where she was. "I don't want to go under! My dress!" She threw her body onto the rim of the boat. If she kept doing that, she was going to tip the boat onto her head. "Stop yanking on it!" I yelled. But she pushed down hard on the boat, lifting the far side. I splashed out to her. "Let go of the—" The lake bottom slipped away. I threw my head back. The water rushed over my face and into my eyes. Slippery grass wrapped around my legs, pulling me down until I kicked free and popped back to the surface. The bottom of the boat pointed to the sky. Sophia wasn't anywhere around it. She'd flipped the boat. The boat was on top of her. I dove. Under the boat was dark and hollow and full of Sophia's breathing. Water battered against the sides of the boat, plinking. "Sophia?" I said, quiet. She didn't say anything, but I could hear her paddling. She grabbed my shoulders and lunged. She kissed me, catching me on the ear. She tried again. This time she got me right on the lips. "What about that?" she said, her voice echoing inside the upside-down boat. I didn't say anything. She dove and swam free. I waited a second, listening to the boat lap in the water. It was like being inside a cave, riding a pirate ship, gliding through the unknown tunnels. I tried to imagine where the pirates might be going, what troubles lay ahead, who would live and who would die, never to return to the arms of their loved ones again. I splatted the water with my palms, then I kicked free too. Sophia was standing on the shore, her hands on her hips. "Boy, Heine, you sure are slow," she said. I didn't know if she meant my escape from the boat or what had happened when she kissed me. She flicked her wet hair and turned to walk away. "I'm guessing you won't be wanting me to tell them about this at supper tonight." Her wet dress was stuck to the back of her legs, riding up as she walked. She didn't reach to pull it down. I had forgotten stupid Larry would be at dinner. We were in the Dallas's cabin because a little bear cabin was bigger than a sparrow cabin. Mom and Mrs. Dallas hadn't bought any sour cream at the grocery store. "Oh, honey," Mom said. "Well, a potato is just as good with butter." "Sour cream will make you fat, boy." Larry was out of his Tuggle suit, which he only wore to greet folks when they first arrived at the resort. He was sitting on the couch, his elbows on his thighs, watching TV. He would take a sip from his beer can, then set it next to the empties on the coffee table. Mr. Dallas was outside tending the steaks, while Mrs. Dallas and Mom were fixing the salad in the kitchen. Every once in a while, Larry would yell, "Wanda!" and my mom would bring him another beer. I glanced at Sophia to see if she'd heard him call me fat. "I'm not fat," I said to Larry, and Sophia rolled her eyes, which was a good sign. She was dry again in blue jeans and a white T-shirt. I could see the outlines of her bra beneath her T-shirt. "What's it like wearing a walrus suit to work?" I asked. "Smells like an onion fart," Larry said, then added, "Heard you all had a mishap on the water today." He clicked his cheek and shook his head, but he wasn't really sorry. "We were preparing," I said. "For what?" He squinched his eyes like I was about to pull a fast one. "For the USA 193 spy satellite to drop. The safest place to be is in the water, underneath a boat. It's all over the internet, how to protect yourself." "Huh." You could tell Larry didn't know if I was making it up about the satellite or not. He was so gross sitting on the couch watching TV when everyone else was working. I'd scrubbed the potatoes. Sophia set the places at the picnic table. Larry just lounged around and drank beer with his shiny shirt sticking to his chest. When he'd walked into the cabin, the whole room stank of aftershave. "You're lying, boy." Larry stretched his arm across the back of the sofa, crossing his legs into a T. "Ain't no USA 293 satellite." "USA 193, Sophia said, her hip propped against the sofa arm. She had an old Rubik's Cube from the game cabinet. She was twisting it. "Spy satellite, headed towards Earth to blow us all to smithereens. Spew toxic fumes everywhere, but not underneath the boat. Give me that." Larry grabbed at the cube, but Sophia was quicker. "Only people who hang out with Scotty will be safe," she said. "He'll know what to do." "Yeah? Well, I hang out with his mom, and I'm pretty sure he'll keep his mom safe." "Rancher Italian," Mama called from the kitchen doorway, holding two bottles of salad dressing. Her hair was up in a funny kind of ponytail that flopped on top of her head. She was wearing an apron she'd found in the kitchen. Bluebirds flew on the apron. She wiggled the salad dressings. "Italian," Larry said, just as Sophia and I were saying, "ranch." 2-1, my mama said, and went back into the kitchen. "Let the babies have their old ranch dressing," Larry called after her. "Come on, Scott." Sophia set the Rubik's Cube on the coffee table and pointed to a round table by the fireplace. The tabletop was covered with a half-finished crossword puzzle. "We can work on the puzzle." "Look at the lovebirds," Larry sang, "going off by themselves, kissy kissy poo poo." He hiked his boot heel on the coffee table, blocking Sophia's way. A dirty boot on the coffee table, where the corn chips and dip were. My mom wouldn't like that. "You gonna let him have at you, girly girl?" Larry scrunched his hands like he was grabbing something. "Let him get a hold of those little titties of yours." Sophia's mouth fell open. Her mom laughed at something in the kitchen. Her dad whistled a tune out by the grill. My mom said, "Get out of here." "You don't know anything." I crossed in front of the TV to stand beside Sophia. "You're just stupid, Tuggles the walrus. Squiggles the squirrel was way better." Larry studied me for a second, then burst out laughing. "Listen at yourself, boy. Squiggles the squirrel was way better," he said in a whiny voice. "Who the hell do you think Squiggles the squirrel was?" He covered his mouth with his palm and hunched his shoulders. He waved. Sophia jerked me by the hand. "Come on, Scott, don't pay any attention to him." My mom poked her head through the kitchen door. "Supper's on the table, everyone," she said. "Mom," I said, staring at Larry, "did you have sex with Squiggles the squirrel?" Mrs. Dallas, who was standing behind my mom, yelped. "Yeah." Larry stood and hitched his britches, which made him lose his footing. "Time for the boy to learn the facts of life. Squiggles the squirrel was getting him some." "You're gross," Sophia said, but she dropped my hand like she didn't want to be part of that. "Squiggles the squirrel was hopping here, hopping there." Larry curved his hands like a squirrel and hopped, sniffing for a treat. He raised his nose and sniffed. "Where can I find me a lonely lady might like to share my nest?" He screwed up his face like a squirrel, thinking, "Ha!" He twirled and pointed at my mom, throwing himself off balance, stumbling. "There!" Mom frowned at him. You kids get to the dinner table. But I wasn't going to leave her. You go, Sophia, I said. But she didn't budge either. Larry grinned, lopsided. Going to be the big man, are you? Little boy believes in Squiggles the squirrel. You're not Squiggles the squirrel, I said. Squiggles was nice, and you're grody. My mom was only friends with you because she thought you were Squiggles the squirrel. She didn't know you were stupid lowlife, Larry. Oh, hi! Oh, hi! Pretending you were nice when you aren't like that at all. You're nothing but Tuggles the dumb walrus. So stupid you let a satellite fall on your head and never even move out of the way. You think so, Buddy Rowe. I do believe your mom thinks I'm pretty good. He leered at my mom, but she shrugged and said, you were nicer last year. You're lazy and gross, and you wear too much aftershave, I added, as Mr. Dallas came to stand beside Mrs. Dallas, listening to me yell at Larry. Just ask them. Everybody thinks so. Larry looked at the group. They stared at him. He splayed his fingers against his chest. He stared at my mom. Wanda! My mom crossed her arms. Wheeling around, Larry gave me an awkward bow. My apologies, young man. Turns out you already know the facts of life. His face got kind of rubbery. Underneath every one of us, there lies a turd. Not me, I said, or my mom, or Sophia, or... Oh, cut it out, he whined, and stomped out the door, muttering to himself like an angry walrus only weird people could understand. Later that night, right on schedule, the U.S. destroyer shot down the spy satellite without incident or mishap, and I didn't even care, because I had something better to tell young Peter. Up close, kissing a girl, her eyes kind of cross and she sighs, just like Captain Darby when he yawns. Young Peter will say he doesn't believe me, but it won't matter. I'll go ahead and tell him anyway, because I know what I'm talking about, and he'll have to listen. Thanks for listening. To contribute to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, a grassroots nonprofit working to end violence in the lives of women, please follow the link at can'tdonothingwithlove.wordpress.com or visit ncadv.org. Message me on Facebook at Can't Do Nothing With Love. Our music, The Lights of Home, was written and sung by Mr. Rob Pate. Rock on, Rob.
Oh, he's the light of home. Thank you. Thank you very much.